that these types of things, which you may normally have been attracted to, but now you're not, because you're actually, your consciousness becomes more absorbed in your spiritual activity. Then a pratipatti, this is interesting, refers to an inability to become absorbed in spiritual activity, even when there isn't anything to distract you. It means just a lack of interest. There's no specific sort of competition that your mind may get attracted to. There's no other thing, but you just can't get into it like that. So a type of indifference, apathy, which stops you from becoming absorbed. Then kashaya means, well, bad habits. Sometimes you may get a little irritated with people when there's no real need, or a little proud like this. Traces of these bad psychological habits. Then rasasvada. This refers actually to the tendency to become sensual, that you may remember some previous experience, something like that, of sense gratification. And so your mind then starts drifting into that rather than being absorbed in the Krishna conscious activity. But we're talking here more like traces of these things. So, nishtata bhakti, or the level of nishta. Nishta means the absence of these things. The absence of these last weaknesses. So one is coming to the level of goodness. Then he goes on to say, go down, just the paragraph after the one which is talking about how these things aren't an obstacle, starts nishta. See that there, nishta, steadiness, is of two types. So this is an interesting point. Two types of steadiness. One is steadiness in bhakti, and the other is steadiness in things which are related to bhakti, but not actually bhakti. So in the same paragraph he talks about bhakti directly, sakshat bhakti. Sakshat means directly. So there are three main divisions, bodily, vocal, and mental. Then he goes into a little discussion about different opinions on which is most important, which we won't really go into. But the basic idea is that steadiness in bhakti means being fixed in bodily service, active service, being fixed in speaking or chanting about Krishna, and being fixed in thinking of Krishna or devotional service like this. Then the next paragraph, things related or things favorable, secondary things. They're not directly part of bhakti, but they're related. Like humility, that's obviously related to bhakti, but it's not directly part of it. Being respectful, being friendly, being merciful, not being proud, not getting angry with people, being peaceful, tolerant. So these are all secondary types of qualities. So he goes on, actually in the same paragraph, to say that you may find a devotee who is very fixed in these secondary qualities, very humble, very peaceful, doesn't get agitated when something goes wrong. But as far as his bodily engagement or his vocal engagement or thinking of Krishna, his actual engagement in devotional activities, he's not always engaged. Sometimes he may talk some nonsense. Sometimes he may not engage in devotional service. He may just, as they say, space out and just sort of, you know, you can't find him when he should be doing his service, like this. So now, you may think, because he has so many nice personal qualities, you may think this person is actually on the level of nishta, fixed, because he's undisturbed and, you know, like that. But actually, he's not really nishta. But then on the other hand, he goes on to explain that you may find, he says, an arrogant devotee. A devotee who's proud and prone to get uptight sometimes and be a little unpleasant. But then you see that this devotee is always engaged in devotional service, always. Always actively engaged, always chanting, like this. So then even though there's a lacking in the secondary qualities, still we will accept that that devotee is on the level of Nishta. Even though there's a lackings in these other secondary qualities, which according to the people in material life, they would think would be more important. So Prabhupada even, would get extremely angry. And people would say, oh, Swami isn't meant to get angry. And they would think this is a defect, but it's certainly not a defect at all. So, like this, of course Prabhupada is beyond Nishta, but at the very least on the level of Nishta through being so completely engaged in devotional service. So, as a little summary then, So, summary, last paragraph, sums it up very nicely. What has been shown is that laxity or intensity of effort and difficulty or ease in being absorbed in devotional service, such as hearing and chanting, is the criteria for discriminating whether the devotee is nishta or not nishta. This is the basic point here. Whether they're really fixed in devotional service or not. So nishta means pure devotional service. Nishta means pure devotional service. There's nothing else. Simply devotional service. Simply fixed always in devotional service. So nishta is a very advanced level, actually. So now, let's go on to ruchi. We're now going into some pretty high levels of devotional service. Ruchi means taste. The idea is that the devotee is now fixed in devotional service. So when you're fixed in devotional service, naturally taste will be there. Naturally. Because devotional service means that one is absorbed on the spiritual platform. And spirit means blissful, satchitananda. So naturally a taste will be there. There's a nice, the bottom of page 19, there's a nice description, very nice description of some of the basic symptoms or characteristics. When the devotee takes in his heart the golden medallion of bhakti, shining effulgently by the fire of steady practice, nishta, and propelled by its own energy, ruchi appears in the heart. A taste appears in the heart. When a person develops a taste for the activities of bhakti, such as hearing and chanting, vastly greater than attraction for anything else, that is called ruchi. So now this is a very advanced level, isn't it? Vastly greater than the attraction for anything else. So, that means that if, going back to Laya, falling asleep, when there's actually one story, you may have heard this Puranic story, that at the beginning of creation, Nidra Devi, have you heard of Nidra Devi? We all know her very well. She's the deity of sleep. She was concerned, she was expressing to Lord Vishnu, beginning of creation, that I'm able to carry out my service to you, meaning put people to sleep very nicely, but I have one problem, that is with your devotees. Your devotees are always hearing and chanting about you, so I'm not able to do my service on them, meaning I'm not able to get your devotees to fall asleep. So I feel that's bad. I want to be able to carry out my service completely. So you have to give me some opportunity so I can do my service with your devotees or put your devotees to sleep. So Lord Vishnu thought for a minute and he said, all right, if my devotees are inattentive during Srimad Bhagavatam class, then you can do your service on them. Yes, during hearing Srimad Bhagavatam class. So Nidra Devi was quite happy with that, and it appears she does quite a good job. or alternatively, we are not being attentive enough. I think that's more like it. So the idea is that when a person is, say, on the level of Bhajana Kriya, they're just beginning, and they don't really have much of a taste, but they have some conviction intellectually. That's like the basis of their Krishna consciousness. Then as soon as Srimad Bhagavatam class starts, they're asleep. As soon as they pick up a book to read, they're asleep. Not quite that bad, but something like that, though. The tendency is there, actually. It's a fact. When they come to the level of Nishta, then Srimad Bhagavatam class starts, and even if they're feeling sleepy, but they'll become absorbed in hearing, and their sleep will go because they're fixed like that. On the level of Ruchi, it's said that even if they are asleep, but some chanting, some hearing and chanting begins, then they'll wake up and become absorbed. They won't be able to sleep. Good example is Maharaj Parikshit. 7 days and seven nights he didn't sleep. He just sat. And he was telling the devotees, or Shukadeva particularly, just go on chanting, just go on. I don't care about the snake bird which is coming, but you just go on chanting about the Lord. So he had such a taste for it that he couldn't sleep for 7 days, seven nights. And he lost any concern, even actually for his own death. He didn't care. He said, just let the snake bird come and bite me. I don't care. But you just go on chanting so I can hear. So this is what it means, that one's attachment for Krishna supersedes all other attachments. So all the other attachments, they just go out the window, gone. And one is absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So it's very, very nice. Unlike in the previous stages, at the stage of Ruchi, constant performance of devotional activities like hearing and chanting does not result in even the least fatigue. Some of you may have had the experience of trying to stay awake on, Pandava near Jala Ekadasi? By the time it gets to 2 o'clock, even when you're standing up, you're asleep. Just looking at your watch every 2 minutes. When will Mangalati come and then I can take rest afterwards? But Ruchi means that there's not even the slightest trace of fatigue as long as one is engaged in devotional service. Then turning over to page 20, Ruchi quickly produces an intense addiction to the activities of bhakti. The devotee, because of this taste, very powerful taste of nectar from all devotional activities, the devotee cannot do without it. The devotee must hear and chant about Krishna and be engaged in devotional service. There's no question of spacing out or just, drifting off here and there. No question of it at all. Very advanced. So then in the next paragraph, he gives a very nice example, very practical example. Actually, the same example is given by Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Instruction. The example of a person with jaundice. That we are, from the spiritual point of view, in a jaundiced condition. And part of that condition is that you taste things which are sweet to be bitter. So he's expressing our condition in those terms. But the cure for jaundice is to take sugar, that thing which tastes bitter, that will cure the jaundice, the condition which is producing this bitter experience. So we are told to chant 16 rounds and be engaged in devotional service, but we are not so keen. It's not like we must do it. We have to do it. We may agree to do it, all right, I'll do it. All right, I'll chant 16 rounds. We may agree to do it. But that attraction and taste we don't have. But if one keeps on hearing and chanting and practicing devotional service, then this will cure the very diseased condition which is producing the resistance to engaging in devotional activities. And then gradually one will experience them to be nectar. So then he goes on to explain there are two types of ruchi, two levels of ruchi, actually. One is a level of ruchi where you get great taste. When there's a kirtan, you're so attracted, it's so wonderful, you must be there. And you become absorbed in it, as long as the kirtan leader really knows how to sing. And as long as there's nice madanga playing and kartels and maybe harmonium and things like that, then, oh, it's just nectar. It's just wonderful. And you just become so absorbed, you don't want to be anywhere else. You just forget about anything else. And that's like your world, the kirtan. Or the prasad. If the prasad is just expertly cooked and very nicely done, then again, you just become absorbed that this is so ecstatic, so wonderful. Or, of course, that's an easier one than it would appear. But it's not so easy. Anyway, we'll talk about that when we talk about the second level of ruchi. Or, he mentions, if someone is talking about Krishna, like here we're talking about Krishna. So now, if I was talking about Krishna in a very poetic way, with all sorts of embellishments and, you know, just in a very sophisticated and wonderful way, then such a person would be thinking, wow, this is just ecstatic. And he'd just become absorbed completely. So, but I'm not. I'm just sort of struggling through here. So such a devotee would think, well, if I have to, then I'll stay here, but like that. So the devotee is experiencing ruchi, experiencing that all-absorbing taste which just captivates the mind and through which everything else disappears, that is dependent to some extent on the excellence of the devotional activities which he is becoming involved in. Then the second level, higher level of ruchi, in other words, progressing towards the next stage, which is asakti, actually. So, it doesn't matter. Even if he was sitting here now, listening to me, sort of mumbling on, he would just be thinking, wow, this is amazing. This is tremendous. And just be totally absorbed. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he would have often, he would have the maha plate brought to him, and he would put his hand in it, and he would just mix everything up. Everything. The sabjis, the dal, the rice, the sweets, the drink, the everything. The chutneys, and just everything. Just mix it till you get this, like, this mess, basically. Which, at least materially, if everything is indistinguishable from everything else, then he'd say, all right, now you go distribute it. And other times, when he didn't do that, he would tell the devotee. There was one devotee whose duty it was to distribute the maha, and he was actually a sannyasi. So it's an important service. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta would ask him, that you note who asks for what? And you tell me. Who asks for the sweet? Who asks for the sabji? And you tell me. So, this higher level then of ruchi means that the devotee is tasting the bhakti. Taste. We're talking about taste. So the devotee is tasting the bhakti, and the external trappings, which may be material, because if you're an expert musician, or even an expert speaker, very clever in speaking, or an expert cook, or whatever it may be, this is not necessarily spiritual. You just may have that aptitude due to your conditioning. You may be that sort of person. So when the person is experiencing taste, but they're tasting to some extent the material trappings, then this is a sign of contamination. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura makes that point. He calls it dosha bas. One should understand this as a taint of impurity in the heart. But where the devotee is simply tasting the bhakti, then this means that it's like a pure spiritual taste and the devotee is quite advanced. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta again, he would often ask one devotee to sing who couldn't sing. We have some devotees like that, sometimes they sing. And it's sort of up and down or flat, it's all on one level. Everyone's wondering, why doesn't he stop singing? I mean, generally they won't lead kirtan, but sometimes you hear them joining in. And it can be a distraction. But he would hear the bhakti. So he would enjoy listening to this devotee sing, even though the devotee couldn't sing. And like this idea of mixing up the prasad. So the devotee's relishing the prasad would be dependent on the presence of bhakti there. And they would be relishing the bhakti. Otherwise, how are you going to relish your sabji dal mixed in with your orange juice? It's not possible. So there's these two stages in ruchi. So in the fourth paragraph it says that a person with the second type of ruchi, which is the higher type, will experience great pleasure even from the beginning of any performance of hearing and chanting. But now, if there is excellence, it'll just increases ecstasy. So it means he hasn't got the slightest trace of impurity in his heart. This is very high level of pure devotional service. And then the next paragraph is very interesting. He is expressing how such a person thinks, or how such a person may speak. And it's quite interesting. O friend, he's expressing great humility. O friend, abandoning the nectar of Krishna's names, why are you engaged in useless talks of family pursuits, of security and enjoyment? What can I say to you? I myself am so wicked. Though I receive the precious jewel of bhakti by the mercy of the spiritual master, I'm so unfortunate that I kept it tied in the hem of my cloth. I just kept it one side, basically. And then he goes on a few more lines down. Alas, such am I, or such is my sense of taste, that I lick up bitter tasting, deceitful, profane gossip like nectar. Hare Krishna. But I remain apathetic when it comes to the names, qualities, pastimes of the Lord. How unfortunate am I? When I start to hear about the Lord, I comfortably fall asleep. And at the opportunity for vulgar discussion, I prick up my ears and become wide awake. In this way, I've always contaminated the assembly of the devotees. Anyway, so he goes on like this. In this way, repenting his previous state of consciousness, someday at some place, the devotee becomes like a bee, tasting ruchi, tasting the nectar of the fruit of the Madhurya Kadambani, the cloud bank of nectar. So this is taste. This is taste.
Now, of course, one point. Mm-hmm. I thought this thing repeatedly became like an affection for hearing and chanting. Does the acidity refer to these two or to the host of the...
That's all of them. Mm-hmm. But hearing and chanting are the first two. Yeah. And if you don't have an attachment for hearing and chanting, you can't... There's a hierarchy. You can't really get an attachment for the others.
Therefore, he is preferring to hearing and chanting so much.
Yeah.
They're like the foundation activities, hearing and chanting. Harinam, 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 Harinam. It's the only way, really. Everything else is supported by that.
Sometimes, you find in the kirtan, when Devendra Swami took up this issue also when he was here, that he wrote a report to the GBC about it being too loud and noisy.
Right.
So could you comment on that in the light of just taste?
See, this, it's not exactly related in the sense that he is concerned about health. It's a genuine health matter, apparently. I don't know much about it, but according to what he has researched, if we have our kirtan, but if it's too loud, then it may cause permanent physical damage. And in the future, that may affect our ability to hear and chant about Krishna. Yeah. So, it's not that he's lacking taste, therefore he's objecting. No, actually likes it. But he doesn't want the danger of this. In fact, I know one devotee, not actually through kirtan, but previously he was involved with guns as a hobby or sport like that, shooting. So, he damaged his eardrums. Now, if you play cartels like we were, just one set of cartels, and it's not terribly strong sound, but is totally intolerable for him. So he wears these earmuffs, like what people who shoot wear. I don't know if you know what I mean. Yeah, it's like headphones, sort of, but they're not headphones. It's just to insulate his ears from sound, because it causes intense pain to his ears. If you just play cartels just one time, it's apparently. So this is the concern of Jayadwaita Swami. But I don't think that he is lacking in taste.
It sounded like
an insinuation
that it's not, I was just trying to clarify where we would stand if we also had
an objection
like that to allow kirtan.
Yeah. Yeah, well, see, we are on the level of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, and we're meant to be Madhyamadhikaris, or trying to be or become. So that means we have to use our discrimination about what is helpful and what isn't helpful in devotional service. So like that type of thinking, it's a matter of using the discrimination to see what is really helpful in the longer run. Because to have a big, loud kirtan, according to Jayadwaita Maharaj, I mean, some devotees disagree. But according to his understanding, a big, loud kirtan with wampas and crashing cartels and everything means that in the future you won't be able to have nice kirtans. You won't be able to do it. So in the longer term, he sees it as being something which is not conducive to hearing and chanting about Krishna, actually. Even though at this point it may appear to be conducive, that we're getting fired up and, you know, all that, stomping around.
Stated that we should not play
these
instruments
so
that
it causes
pain.
Right. Yes. We are sometimes a little short on etiquette, though. A little more on the side of enthusiasm. A little shorter on the side of, you know, sophistication, taste, maturity, and like that. So let us go on. How are we doing? Oh, we're doing extremely well. My God. We're going to finish early. Hmm?
Does this quality, laya, vikshepa, does it progress as one advances in Krishna consciousness? Like
they become less.
They become less.
Yes.
And become more apparent.
Yes. Well, see, where, as a person is approaching nishta, then these other things will be mainly non-existent. So the main obstacles that he'll be, he practically won't be facing obstacles because he's coming to the level of nishta. But the only obstacles which will really be there will be these. Now, of course, earlier on, back around here, or particularly back there, it's not that the devotee will not be falling asleep at the wrong time. The devotee will be doing it a lot more. So actually, these things will be have been reducing. They will have been existing, but reducing. But by the time the person is approaching Nishta, they'll be just about the only problems that the devotee has. Got any ideas? The others, like, say, just being a... Anyway, the others basically will be more or less non-existent. The tendency to become offensive. One won't have that tendency. It'll be basically gone. Yeah. So that's the idea. So let's go on now to asakti. Asakti is the level that immediately...